It's time for the best 60 minutes of your life. This is the Homer Hour, broadcasting live from the Gruber Law Office's One Call That's All studio at the Avenue in downtown Milwaukee. Alongside former Badger and Packer Gary Ellerson, here's Emmy Award winner Homer.
The best 60 minutes of your day, the Gary Ellerson Homer Hour. Gary is on assignment, so I've violated the number one rule of sports talk. The Brewers are playing right now.
Why are they playing in the afternoon?
I have no idea why it's a 3 o'clock game. But it's like they're in Chicago. The rule would be there's no reason to talk about the Brewers because the Brewers are playing. Anybody interested in the Brewers isn't going to be listening to the Gary Ellerson Homer Hour if you're talking about the Brewers, because they would be listening or watching the game. But I said, I don't care. The necessity to interview the doctor of pitching, Jerry Augustine, is at the highest level because everybody needs to get information about how are you going to use the pitchers? How are you going to use Miz? How are you going to use Woody? How are you going to use Peralta? And my belief that the ability of the Brewers to advance in the playoffs will be based more on how well the three pitchers do than anything else. And then how do you prepare? How many innings does Miz pitch? How do you get him ready for the playoffs? And then the injury to Woody, he's pitching well now. It's more complicated than if you had three pitchers all like Peralta is right now. So there's a process for all of us to try to understand what's going on. And even though people will not be listening right now because they're following the Brewer game, which, by the way, is 1-1 in the top of the seventh, Jackson Chourio has a home run. Brewers have only three hits. It's been weird. They've had games where they've had no hits, very few, and then they have a ton of hits. But doesn't matter, because you have ESPN Wisconsin app where you will be able to go to and hear and listen to Jerry Augustine, so you can learn more about what's going on from the doctor of pitching. Not to mention any thoughts that he might have about whether or not the Brewers would make a move. The other issue is the length of the season. You have Pat Murphy, the manager, talking about how whatever happens, it's just, he said, July 21st. There are just so many games left. And how do you view the importance of a game? The series with the Cubs is coming up. It's a big series, but not that big, because there are so many games left. On the other hand, you don't want to put yourself in a situation where all of a sudden you're down five games and then you're required to have some incredible run in order to win the division and make it easier in the playoffs. Jerry Augustine is currently on assignment. Did they give you the wrong number, Pebble?
No, it's the right number. I have it saved in my phone as well, so it's the right number.
Probably listening to the game. You wouldn't call me back. Yeah, I would. So that's to me, everything regarding the Brewers, even though they're playing right now, is going to be determined by an understanding of their pitching. How many pitchers they have in the rotation? Could they trade a younger pitcher? How much do they need an additional bat, of course, there? And then the issue of, this is the other one about, you don't want to change the clubhouse, and that you bring someone new in and you have this great clubhouse. And my view on that is, I think this group, you have a great clubhouse. I don't care who you bring in. The person is not capable of ruining this clubhouse because of the nature of the players that you have. But I don't even know if that's true. Or whoever you bring in, the manager can take care of him. And again, we'll address that with Jerry Augustine as well, given he was on the team, the last team that went to the World Series, and how much the clubhouse is the clubhouse determined by the group that you have, and then how can that be changed? When they made the move with Hader, my belief was that the clubhouse was not strong. Or the Brewers were disappointed in how the clubhouse and the players responded to what they did. I don't know, so that maybe they shouldn't have done it, but maybe the problem was the clubhouse and was going to exist whether they make... It just seemed like they were way too fragile. I'm not sure that I'm right on that, but it seems to me this clubhouse and with the direction of Murphy... whatever happens, whoever they add, and whatever goes on, the clubhouse is going to be fine. But as Tony Smith likes to say from time to time, Homer, you just make stuff up. I don't think I'm making it up, but I don't know the dynamics, really, of a clubhouse and to how good it can be. I think if you have a clubhouse that can't handle the addition of one player or a trade, then you don't have a very good clubhouse. I didn't understand it with Hader. Everybody liked Hader. Fine. They know how it is, how the Brewers do things. It wasn't like the Brewers did anything out of character. And you had another guy who was an outstanding closer. So it wasn't like we have a great closer, but we don't have anybody as a backup like the Packers had in the playoffs when they had the injury to Jenkins. So, but I will defer to Jerry Augustine on that. We will take a early break, and then I know Jerry Augustine will no longer be on assignment. That is next. The Gary Olson Homer Hour. Gary Olson on assignment. By the way, this is Mark Murphy Day, as declared by the mayor of Green Bay. He's leaving as a Packer president. Seems like he's done. I'd say he did okay, but he really didn't do anything. Everything that won a championship was in place before he took over. The changes he made have not produced a championship or a trip to the Super Bowl. But not like it's been bad, but I think he's done fine. But again, that was just because he didn't do anything with the people that were in place. Joining us now is the doctor of pitching, Jerry Augustine. Even though the Brewers are playing, and, well, things just went very bad. Miami just scored. The Marlins just scored 4 runs. But you're not supposed to talk about baseball on a sports talk show when the Brewers are playing. But this is an educational process where I want everybody that might be listening to the Brewers now will be able to go to ESPN Wisconsin, the app, and listen to what the doctor of pitching, Jerry Augustine, has to say. Doc, you ready to go?
I am ready to go. But Homer, I thought you were going to start calling me 94.
Oh, that's right. I apologize because joining us now is 94 because Jerry Augustine, at his best, threw 94 mile an hour. And I would say that you probably could have thrown faster, but I don't know when you were pitching whether people put that much to how fast your fastest pitch was. All right,
yeah,
94.
You don't know. You don't know how fast it was.
Well, no, but did you... All right, so now I have to put a little something-something on it, or was it your feeling that the most important thing was movement? All right, so you're facing someone, and did you ever think, I gotta throw the hard one a little bit harder or not?
No, I think I was the type of guy that I was really... I had to be creative, and I had to pitch to the strike zone a lot and throw strikes and get ahead of hitters. That was my most important thing. But maybe the times when I would throw harder would be maybe a four-seam fastball when I would throw it on the inside part of the plate. Didn't want a lot of movement, but wanted to get it to a certain spot with a little bit of velocity. Had to raise it up in the strike zone a little bit. maybe those are times where it was 94. But you know, I probably pitched at a 89 to 92
when I was most consistent. Back then, it wasn't a four seam fastball. People just called it a fastball, right? Or maybe you did privately.
Well, actually, we did call it a four seam. Across the seams was a four seam fastball that you could was a pitch that was invariably fairly straight that you could locate and add velocity. And then a two seamer, when you held it with the seams, made the ball move or sink the ball a lot of times. And actually, when I got up a little bit, Cal McClitch taught me how to cut the ball by holding it four seams on a little bit offside, and I could actually make the ball cut.
So what's the difference between a two seamer and a slider? Isn't that the same thing?
Well, a two-seamer sinks away from a hitter.
And that's what a slider does.
Well, if you're, let's set it up now.
All right.
A right-hand hitter for a left-hand pitcher, a two-seamer will fade away to a lefty. A four-seamer, a cutter, or a slider
will
go into the hitter. That's
okay.
Right.
All right. So then a two-seam is more of a screwball.
Yeah, it's like a screwball.
Yeah, why don't they just call it a screwball? Well, come on, 94. Let's just make it easier for people that follow baseball. You got a fastball, you got a slider, you got a screwball, and you got a curveball, and you got a changeup. Those are the five pitches.
A sinker or a tailing fastball is held with the seams, and you really don't turn it over a lot. A screwball, like Fernando Valenzuela, really turn the ball over a lot, they do sometimes. They call a changeup. Really get on top and really spin
their
hand.
See, I
want to
tell you
down.
This: the doctor of pitching 94. No one cares about all that stuff. They don't care how you do it. They care what happens. Changeup works because it, I would assume, looks like a fastball, but it's significantly slower, so you're way out in front. Curveball moves, right?
The grip moves.
Yeah. Now, how you do it, I don't care. No, but that's what they all say. They have all these words for it. Now, a cutter. Okay.
A cutter is held a little bit like.
I don't care how
it's held.
What does it do? What does a cutter do?
It just moves. It moves short. A cutter moves small. A slider moves a little bit bigger, and a curveball is over the top. Goes straight
well,
down.
Why would you throw a cutter instead of a slider when a slider moves more, which is going to make it tougher to hit?
Because a cutter is thrown a lot like a fastball. You get kind of a fastball velocity on it compared to what a slider will. A slider will be always a couple miles per hour slower. Like if I throw 90 miles an hour,
right.
I throw my cutter 90, my slider will probably be in that 85, 86, 84 category.
Right, but if it moves more, it's going to be tougher to hit.
It depends on what you do. What you try to do is you try to get the ball. A cutter moves in on the hitter where you get the guy thinking it's a fastball and it's straight. He goes in, it just moves a little bit, and it gets off the inside part of a bat if I'm a lefty going to a righty.
No, yeah. I mean, we're just going righty against righty or lefty against lefty. So
yeah.
It's all moving away.
Yeah, that's right. You're absolutely right. You move the ball to get it off the fat
right now.
Part
okay,
of the bat.
Let me see here. This needs to be explained. We're helping people out. They can go to this. All right, Greg Maddux, for example, or I think of Mark Fittich. There are pitchers that have late movement.
That's right.
Which is the best thing everybody wants because then a hitter can't adjust. I thought, for example, Maddux, that it was just his normal fastball that just had more movement, and that's what made him so special. Are you trying to tell me that, well, I thought he was throwing a fastball, his fastball didn't move, that it would have been what they now call a cutter that would have been the thing that moved? Or am I right and they're just making stuff up now?
Well, it just means everything they do nowadays and even back with Maddux is how you grip the ball, Homer. And it all transcends and how you want the ball to move. If you hold the ball with the seams and you get on top of the ball, you can make the ball, if you're a right-hand hitter, tail into a right-hand hitter. That's what they call a sinker or a tailing fastball. And then if you want it to cut, what you do is you hold the ball a little bit off seams with the same way, and the ball moves away from a right-hand hitter. And what you do is it's the way you grip the ball. You hold it off center, and when you come down, you just snap the ball down and make sure that your hand doesn't open up towards the hitter. And that makes the ball move.
Okay.
It's just a matter of how you grip the ball, and that gives you the different movements.
Right. But I just want to tell you that people don't care how you do it. They just want to.
No.
They notice what you do.
That's right.
All right. So
Absolutely.
This pitch does this, therefore that's what it is. But anyway, we'll move. We got more important stuff, though. All right. Now let's get to Miz. All right. How do you decide? How do they decide? Who decides how many pitches he gets each time he pitches? Understanding, which I believe, and tell me if I'm wrong, that it's all based on making him as ready or with as many pitches as possible come the playoffs.
I agree. I think that what they're doing, they have a certain amount of limit that they want. They know that from now till the end of the year that he's going to have X number of starts. And in those X number of starts, they want to hold his innings pitch to a certain amount of innings pitched. And the only way they can do that is by putting him on a pitch count per game. And some games, if he goes out there and he's nice and smooth, he gets a lot of early outs, he'll go deeper into ball games. But if he goes in and he's striking guys out, going deep in the counts, that's going to be the less number of
innings. So what do you say to people that say, what's going on here? Come on, let him keep pitching.
It's because they don't want him to hurt his arm. His last year, he pitched right around 135 innings or 140 innings or whatever it was. And what they want to do is they want to keep it within a 20% range of that. Oh. And he's getting really close already. When you look at the number of pitches that he's thrown already, even in the big leagues, he could have gone longer. There's no question that he was at a
well. Then
at a
maybe
stage
they
where,
should pitch him even less then.
Well, you want to keep him sharp. You know, he's in a. I think the one thing they're doing with Mizorowski right now, Homer, to be very honest with you, they want him to go out and experience the major leagues, and they want him to do it on a consistent basis.
Okay.
Go through regular routines like you do for your starts, and get a regular routine and go out there and understand when you go in a ball game the pitches that you throw, how they feel, how you feel, how he's commanding them, what's his demeanor on the mound, and how he's going about it. And I think that has a lot to do with forming a pitcher. And that's what took so long to get him to the big leagues. It wasn't that he couldn't pitch. It wasn't that he didn't have good stuff. It was that they were trying to take the physical part and add the mental part to it and make it work. And that, I think that's what took so long, where the mental part of it was being able to go on the mound, execute the pitches, stay in the frame of mind that you have to be in a game, and then you can succeed in what you're doing. And that's what happened. He started getting the mental part along with the physical part, and that's what got him up to the big leagues. And that's why he's really so successful now, is because physically he's making all the pitches he wants to make. And whether it's a fastball, slider, curveball, or a changeup, he's using all those pitches. But on the mental side, he's pitching now. He's not just throwing. He's pitching. He's using that mental part of the game of executing a game plan and going into game and see how he uses it. And that's why the Brewers right now, there's really no formula for him in a game. It's just go out and execute your pitches. And when you execute your pitches this year, we'll formulate something in the offseason that will make you a better pitcher.
Talking with the doctor of pitcher, Jerry Augustine, so that we all know what's going on with Miz. I'm saying right now, the fans should realize he's not going to pitch more than 7 innings in any game all the way through the playoffs. Will you join that club, or do I need to, or is that not accurate?
I agree. I agree with you. I think what they're trying to do now is that's why you see him going, and sometimes they'll go get him like last time after into the fourth inning or into the fifth inning. They're going to go get him, or after 5 innings, depending on the pitch count, is because they want to keep him healthy. And if they can keep him healthy, they know that he can be just a big part of this team in the playoff season of this year. So what they want to do is keep him healthy. So they're going to limit his pitch count, and they're going to set him up. He may miss a start or two. They might say, hey, you know what? We're going to go through a routine. You're going to go through the regular routine you do for a starter, but we're going to skip your start this time, and you'll start 2 down, and he'll just rotate over into his the routine after he was supposed to pitch. So they're going to try to keep him.
And nobody should be bothered by that.
No. They want him for the playoffs. They want, if when you take him and you put him in the playoffs, he's a bona fide number one guy who can get you through 4 or 5 innings without giving much. And he's just one of those guys. When you look at the Brewers now, they got 3 qualified, bona fide number one pitchers right now. When you take him, Woody, and Peralta, those are 3 guys that I would put up against anybody in a series.
And you can beat any team in a series, even the Dodgers, anybody, with those 3 pitchers. If you have those 3 pitchers and they pitch well, right?
So that's yes, you can.
Yeah.
You can, because those guys give you everything, whether it's Peralta, whether it's Woody, the way he's throwing the ball right now. They're setting up Woody the kind of same way what they're doing with Mizorowski. But with Mizorowski, they're just being very temperamental on how much they pitch him, the number of pitches, and the innings pitched.
Talking with the doctor of pitcher, Jerry Augustine. Yes, I apologize. I didn't call him 94. Yeah, he threw 194 miles an hour. All right. What do you observe when you watch Miz pitch? Because I think if I were Jerry Augustine or anybody's pitching, I would notice how often the hitters look like they got no chance. And I'm asking you, among the pitchers that you pitch with for the Brewers, who, when they were at their best, and you can say yourself if it applies, you would just say they got no chance. They just don't have, he's got too much, his stuff is too good. Who, when they were at their best, showed more unhittable situations for batters when you were playing with the Brewers?
Boy, I tell you what, there's a couple guys. The guy that was always, when you talk about, he probably didn't throw as hard as everybody
I don't care
did,
how threw he hard.
Was Pete Vukovich. He had a really super knowledge. Him and Don Sutton, of course, a Hall of Famer. Yep. Those guys really had a great idea about what they wanted to do to hitters and what they had to do to get a hitter out. Sutton, it was that great breaking ball and being able to locate fastballs up in the zone, where Pete Vukovich had a pitch where he could throw the ball, a fastball in on a guy and really spot that slider on the outside corner. You knew if Pete Vukovich got 2-2 on a guy, he was going to throw a slider about a couple inches off the outside, and the guy would look at it, and then the next time he'd come back with that same pitch only in the strike zone. He had that much control, and when he was dialed in, I'll tell you what, there was nobody better.
All right, talking with Jerry Augustine, the doctor of pitching, we got a couple more minutes. All right, now we get to Woody. Woody seems to me, in the last recent games, every bit as good as Miz. I'm not saying he throws it as hard, but the hitters look like they have no chance. But then he's coming back from an injury. What should people understand or expect? Can the Brewers ever be sure of how good Woody can be in the playoffs? Or is it just going to be, to some degree, a guess because of his injury he's coming back from?
I think it goes at each start, Homer. I think you look at the way he does and you look at what he's done. He doesn't walk people. He gets ahead of hitters. And I think the one thing with Woody has done is you'll see every once in a while he'll get that velocity up 96. 95, 96. Yeah, it used to be a 97, 98 at times, but 95, 96. And what he does, he locates the ball as well. He's the Woody of old, adding some pitches to it. And before he got hurt, the pitch that he was working on the hardest was probably his changeup. It was when he got in the ball game, when he could throw that two seam sinker down in the zone and make him hit it on the ground, that was success. That was success for Woody. So now what he does, he has a two seam sinker that he can sink the ball and run it away to maybe or into a right-hander, away to a left-hander. Then he has the four-seam fastball that he elevates in the zone, which has a good velocity, and he can locate it real well. And then he has a changeup and a breaking ball to go with it. I think the big thing with Woody now, he is executing all his pitches so well that I think as time goes on, he builds up, he gets stronger and stronger. He'll be able to go later in the game. But they're going to watch him closely to start. They're going to let him go five or six or seven starts where – he's in that 60 to 70% 70 pitch area, and they're going to say that's enough because they want to keep him in a good spot and help him build each time he goes out, let him stay in his routine and see how he does. And I think Woody will probably – they'll go with Woody a little bit different than they'll go with Mizorowski because Mizorowski is such a young – and he's such got a talented arm. He's going to be one of the best in all of baseball hopefully someday. But with Woody is a little bit different. Woody's going to build up, and he's going to keep building and building and building to where they feel that he's strongest. And that's going to be between Woody and the pitching coach and the pitching staff to say, hey, you know what? You're going to be at a 60, you're going to be a 70, you're going to be at 80. And that how well he pitches in a game will dictate that.
Is there any way they can know for sure, or should Brewer fans know, it's not a flip of the coin, but Woody, you hope for the best, but there'll be an unknown because of the injury for the rest of the season, and nobody can know for sure if he's going to be 100% before the end of the year. What should people, I don't know, expect or understand about the injury and its input on Woody for the entire remaining part of the year?
Well, I think it's Woody's going to dictate it. He's going to let him know how he feels. And he's pretty good about he understands what he's gone through and this all the big things that he has gone through to get back. He understands, oh, you know what, I've had enough. I don't know how much further I can go. But he's pretty open about it, and he knows it, and he understands it. He had an outing back a couple outings ago where he was at about the 75 pitch, and he was throwing the ball excellent, and they walked out. And after the game, he said, yeah, I was at my limit. I could feel it. I could sense it. Well, he's a veteran guy that's been it. He's done it. He's fifth in the Cy Young Award.
Any idea how he's going to feel the next outing, or is it more of an unknown because of the injury, or what?
I think he pretty well knows. I think he knows his limits.
Right.
I think to stay in a groove with a routine is the biggest thing for Woody. And I say, you know, you could see him now throwing at a limit of 70 pitches, maybe 75. I can see it going 85 and 90 down the road. But it's gonna go. How is he pitching? How is he feeling? How is it? And when in between starts, how is routine? If he's consistent with everything, he can build it up and do very well and go as long as he wants. And I think the Brewers will be a little bit. Let me just say that they'll give him more rope to go out and do more and pitch a little bit longer than they would say a Mizorowski.
All right. And now the last question about the clubhouse. Well, if you had this person, you got to make sure that it doesn't change the chemistry in the clubhouse. And I said, garbage. If you got a good clubhouse, you're not worried about one person affecting the clubhouse. If one person can come in and affect the clubhouse that much, you don't have a good clubhouse. But maybe I'm wrong. I mean, how was your clubhouse, and what or is your thought when people talk about you'd like to, you know, make the team better, but you have to worry about the chemistry of the clubhouse in terms of adding someone? Take it away, Doc.
I think that this ball team understands what it wants to accomplish. And when you look at a ball club, I personally, Homer, I don't think the Brewers have had a ball club that has played so well together in all three phases. I think they've had some great ball clubs. 82, we had a great ball club, and we played well in the phases. But in all three phases, everybody playing very well and doing very well is something that you don't want to mess with. Whether it's the clubhouse or whatever, it's just the way the team is playing. I think anytime you can make the team better, I think the players understand that, and I think anybody who would come into the clubhouse would be welcome because they know you're coming to make us better. Does it change the chemistry? I don't think it really changes the chemistry. I just think it just changes how you go about your chemistry in your clubhouse.
But this clubhouse is better than 82? What?
This clubhouse, I'm not going to say the clubhouse is better because we had a bunch of awesome guys. You don't get better guys than we had in 82. What I'm saying, I don't think the Brewers have ever had a team that plays in all three phases of the game, whether it's offense, defense, pitching.
Wow.
Play at such a high level that this team is playing right now. They're
Whoa.
Playing just super. They go out and they play each game. It's somebody new. If you look at the players, other than Christian Yelich, and I say cheerio at the plate, name other guys that are really all standouts. Probably none. There's probably guys who are good and they're talented and they can play, but you look at everybody kind of chips in.
They got a bunch of Gantners. How about that? What do you say? They got a bunch of Gantners, or am I underselling how great he was?
Well, I'll tell you what. I'll take 9 Gantners anytime because I know you're going to be in for a game and a team that's going to play as hard as
you can. Yeah, but that's how they talk about this team, right?
That's
like they
right.
talked
they
about Gantner.
They play, and they all go. It's somebody going to chip, somebody new chipping in every night, whether it's a pitching performance or it's a hitting performance or it's a defensive performance. This team does more things at a high level of baseball at a positive part, what you have to have in order to win ball games, than a lot of Brewer teams that have been in the history of this ball club.
And lastly, talking with 94, the doctor pitcher, Jerry Augustine. You're pretty positive in general. Can this team win the World Series, or how positive do you have to feel to say something like that? Like, come on, Homer, calm down. They're good, but let's not go crazy. What do you say when I say, with those three pitchers, if they stay healthy, this team can win the World Series? Am I going too far?
You know what? I don't think you're going too far. I think when you look at this, it's all about pitching and defense. And when you look at the starting staff, it's not just 3 guys deep. It's 9 guys deep. And you can have guys who can go and perform. Do you, when you look at a starting rotation facing a guy like Mizorowski and then going to Woody and then Peralta or whichever way you want to go, that's as good as you can get because they're 3 bona fide number ones. But you have guys starting, backing it up that are just as are quality starters. You look at the bullpen. I think they have the best bullpen in all of baseball, the way they're throwing. I think McGill has made some changes since the beginning of the season to get even better. He's in a zone right now where he's throwing the ball extremely well, but the guys in front of him are all throwing the ball very well. But when you take the pitching and you take this great defense, I'll tell you what, they're capable of anything. And one reason I say that, Homer, is this team goes out and they manufacture runs. They manufacture runs. They find a way to go out and manufacture runs, whether it's running the bases, getting base hits in consecutive orders, once in a while a home run and all that. But when you play against them, when you go out, you have to earn the runs you get. And how do you earn the runs you get? You've got to beat a pretty good pitching staff in order to score those runs. So when you talk about the Brewers manufacturing runs, you talk about opponents trying to having to earn their runs, I think this team could go a long way, and it's gonna prove out as we go along. This month of August is going to be really tell a story, and when you get into September, when you get the fun month of September. But this club has all the attributes of being a really good club that can go a long way.
Talking with the doctor of pitching, and yeah, everybody, they were listening to the game. It doesn't matter. We're gonna tell the world. You go to ESPN Wisconsin, the app, and then you listen to Jerry Augustine, the doctor of pitching. We've run out of time, but you know my one question was going to be, and I'll ask you the next time.
What is it?
Is this pitching staff so good that Jerry Augustine wouldn't have been good enough to pitch for this team?
Wow.
Don't answer.
Okay.
Because already people are thinking I'm mean. People are thinking I'm mean. 94, I'll ask it next time. You can think about it.
That's awesome. That's a great question. I'm more than happy to answer it.
All right. Mike Lucas, next. What the heck is going on with Wisconsin football? To which I said, I got to talk to Mike Lucas. Nobody knows Wisconsin football in context of he's been covering Wisconsin football I don't know how long. I'm sure it's over 50 years. He saw it really good. He saw it really bad. He's seen everything. No one can put it in the proper context better than Mike Lucas, who joins the program right now. Lukey, good evening.
Good evening. 56.
56.
56 years since I wrote my first column on Badger football for the Badger Herald in 1969.
All right. I'm assuming in 69 they were terrible, but I'm not sure.
Oh, they were awful.
Yeah.
Just kind of awful. Yeah, I saw, or I was witness to, a 23-game winless streak here. That was kind of my introduction to Badger football as a college student.
And I don't know if it's this simple. I think it is. It's always, to me, who the coach is. It was a mess. Yeah, Milt Bruhn did pretty well. And then, of course, Barry Alvarez changed everything because that's what a good coach does. Is that too simplistic or not?
Yeah. If we're going to compare it to how the game is played today and how the landscape has changed, yeah, it's all about money. Can you afford to stock your roster with players? Can you afford to also buy depth? I mean, that's the difference between the top teams, the top tier teams, and everybody else in most conferences.
All right, talking with Mike Lucas. So am I then to assume that the struggles that Wisconsin is going through is just the result of not having enough money, or can you have the money and just pick the wrong people with the money that you have? What?
No, that's fair. I don't think that they've had a great accuracy with some of the players that they've brought into this program over the last couple of years. I know they're still high on some. And because of the turnstile that college football and basketball have become, the rosters change so dramatically from one season to the next. But if we're just looking at a bottom line, it's about money. It's about the players you purchase. And can you sustain it? That's the concern for programs like Iowa, Minnesota, and Wisconsin. How long can you sustain it and play with the brand schools? And I know there's been much said about the changes that have been made, but until I see those guardrails go up on spending, until I see somebody crack down on the teams that spend more than anybody else, fair or foul, I think it's just going to be very hard to compete. And especially for a Wisconsin program that had no real familiarity with losing until last season, and that negative momentum that they've generated, it's hard to overcome. Really,
so
it is.
Then how do you assess Luke Fickell? I thought it was a huge hire. Now I'm thinking, I don't think so, because I don't think guys at Ohio State coach that well. They just have phenomenal players, And they just send them out there, and they're good enough to win. But I don't know what to think. How should people, and how have you evaluated Luke Fickell to this point?
Well, it's too early to come to any conclusion. But I'm curious, why did you think he was such a good hire, Tommy?
Because if you get Cincinnati to the playoffs, you got to know what you're good. And he had a history of understanding what was necessary in the Big Ten because of his time at Ohio State. So he understands the Big Ten, and he did what no one thought possible at Cincinnati.
Go back and look at the record and see who he beat that year that he got to the
He didn't beat anybody before. Really good. Yes.
He beat Notre Dame. You're Notre Dame. That was okay. That was the power school. But so, no, I think, hey, look, he came to Wisconsin with all the credentials.
Right.
That's what swung the deal here. The AD fell in love with him. But he's yet to prove himself. And it's going to be difficult this year because, obviously, the schedule. I mean, no break. So they've got a very good chance to be 3-1 on their first bye, okay?
Yeah.
I think they're going to beat Miami, beat Middle Tennessee, and beat Maryland here because Maryland stinks. And they'll lose at Alabama. Then they get the bye, and then they get into a world of hurt the rest of the year. They might win two more games.
Talk with Mike Lucas. That's why you're not going to cover for anything. So I don't know. Well, I don't think anybody even knows who's on the team. How many new players have they spent more money? What? Tell us what's.
That's the dilemma right now. You don't know enough about the players they bring in because it's been a swinging door. They lose some, they gain some. I always wonder about the chemistry involved, the continuity. It can't be good for here or anybody else, but I just think the quality of players elsewhere is higher than
how Indiana. How did Indiana do it? Indiana, well, they don't even care about football.
Well, there are two things there. That's a hell of a coach, a great right. motivator. You know, old dude, great motivator, brought most of the team from James Madison with him.
But they didn't have money.
They used all the kids from James Madison to get some momentum, right. and their schedule was such, until they played the good teams, they won a lot of games.
Right.
But they showed their warts against the better competition. I'm not taking anything away from the Hoosiers, though. I mean, I go all the way back to Bill Mallory. When he was unjustly fired because they thought they could elevate their program to a real competitive level. They were wrong, dead wrong. But this guy is something else. I'm curious to see how he does this year. He's got a whole new boatload of players through the transfer portal. But this is going to be a little bit more difficult for him because now teams won't take him for granted. Indiana won't be able to sneak up on some teams like they did last year.
So what does Wisconsin have in the portal? Nobody even knows the quarterback situation. How good are they going to be at quarterback?
Well, Billy Edwards, I watched him play last year. A couple of times I watched Maryland play. I saw him play really well against Southern Cal. That was his premier game. But then he got into a slump as the team got into a slump and didn't win again. Seems to be a good leader. You know, has a lot of intangibles, qualities like that. I believe he's going to pose a threat running the ball, which it's going to be a big part of the new offense here. Jeff Grimes is more power-oriented, run-oriented than Phil Longo was. And that's going to be a change for the good. I think everybody agrees. Now, my quarrel was, why did you go to that offense to begin with? I mean, you went against tradition here for 2 years. Now you change your mind and reset the whole thing. I don't get it. I still don't get it.
Well, I can explain that.
Well, explain it.
He messed up. He totally messed up. And I'm not convinced. I'm not convinced that you have to play a certain style at Wisconsin. Now, I think this change back is because he didn't know what the hell to do. He thought he brought in the guy that would give them the best chance to win in the current way they play college football, right? That's why he brought the guy in. Teams play that offense. Now, it hasn't worked. All right, so let's go back to being Wisconsin. Well, you don't even believe in Wisconsin. Otherwise, because if you had and people told you, you would have done it this way from the beginning. You're just trying to come up with something that people will accept. What do you think of that analysis?
Well, no, that's not bad. What I don't know is, was there any pressure on Fickell to change the offense from the AD? I don't know.
No, I can tell you what the pressure was. He's going to get his butt fired. If he loses playing old-fashioned Wisconsin football, people will accept that much better. And so I think he did it, and I'm not even sure he believes it. I think he did it because it looks good.
Well, the thing is, that's not what he ran at Cincinnati. So we go back to what you were saying. Hey, he proved himself at Cincinnati. He got to the Final Four. Well, he didn't do it with that type of offense, okay? So it went counter to his thinking offensively. And he didn't run that type of offense when he was the interim coach at Ohio State for 1 year, nor all those years he was an assistant coach at Ohio State, nor all those years he played in the trenches for Ohio State. So it doesn't make sense why he changed up that way, given the personality and the tradition of this program.
All right. So either way, the move had to be made, right? I mean, the guy they failed, right?
No. What move are you talking about?
I just keep thinking of Don Morton. You know, we're gonna play the Veer. What was the offense? The guy he called it. Well, the guy's gone.
You've forgotten about Paul Christ and Jim Leonard?
No. The first guy, what was the guy's name? The guy that Fickell brought
in. Phil Longo?
Yes.
Phil, yeah.
So they ran, yeah.
It was a Mike Leach offense. They ran the Mike
Correct.
Leach.
Correct, right.
The air raid, okay?
Air raid.
And they didn't have the personnel to run it effectively or to the extent that they thought they could run it efficiently, which I said, they went against the grain.
All right, and he went against his grain, as you said.
I'm guessing because he doesn't have any history of running that type of offense, so I don't know why he decided to change it now. And he did. Now he gets to change it all over again and reset.
What will you accept as far as number of wins this season?
Well, I would accept, well, it doesn't matter what I want.
Yeah, it was, because that's a judgment of how they're doing, how he's doing.
I think. If he can get to the point where he's a 500 team near the end of the year, that'll be pretty damn good given the schedule.
All right. That'll work.
I mean, if nothing else, if you can find a way, they're going to have to find a way to win some games that they're not favored in. All right.
Well, you know what? I'm going to call you back and ask you how he's doing.
They had chances last year.
Yes.
To pull off some upsets. Incredible. Yeah. I mean, they beat the heck out of Southern Cal for a half and then melted down.
They should have beat
Oregon here. They should have beat Penn State here. And they couldn't finish.
Yeah.
They couldn't finish.
And you know who I hold responsible for that?
I don't know, one of your friends?
No, the head coach. That's on the head coach. Some coaches have the ability to get teams to do that. Some don't. And right now, he's a don't.
Well, right now, until he starts winning games again. Like I said, it's very difficult to reverse negative momentum.
Yes.
And there's absolutely no buzz around this program in the city right now.
You got it. Lukey, thanks. We've run out of time, but we will talk again. You have the podcast with Tom Oates.
Hey, wait a minute.
Yes.
You talk about a podcast, Wisconsin Sportscast, Lucas and Oates, Tom Oates, almost 100 years of experience covering Wisconsin sports. Dial it up.
I'll mention it again. Thanks. Next. Holtebeck Eye Center. Dr. Aaron Holtebeck and the team make vision care a top priority with the latest technologies at their state-of-the-art Brookfield office. I was there. He told me how great and proud they are the 20 years, but it wasn't good enough. Last year, Sheena Boss joined the team. Dr. Holtebeck wants to be even better. Now accepting new patients. Important. Now accepting new patients. Don't mess with your vision. Trust the experts. From Holtebeck Eye Center in Brookfield near the corner of Calhoun and Capitol. Learn more about their services at Holtebeck.com. Now accepting new patients. They were good. Now they're even better. Yes, the Wisconsin Sportscast with Lucas and Oates. The Wisconsin Sportscast with Lucas and Oates. ESPN National next.